Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Watch Dad Podcast. I'm a professional dog runner and watch enthusiast talking to his pals about dogs and watches. How's everybody doing? Thank you so much for listening. You know, I appreciate it. Finally, an episode. This seems to be my MO at this point, right? Do a string of many months of episodes. Last year, I was pretty regular until about September, October, and radio silence since then. I have no good excuse other than I had good intentions to record every week, but, you know, work, life, everything kind of gets in the way. Still been doing Watch Soup with Bobby Legs and Sanjay, although Sanjay is on a bit of a hiatus. Exciting new things happening for him, a new job, very busy, studying up, learning all about his new job. So we wish him well. We miss him. But and Bobby also created a new YouTube channel specifically for Watch Soup. So I'll put a link to that in the show notes so you can catch that. We still do it every Sunday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time here in the U.S. That's been a lot of fun. Sometimes we have guests, but for the most part, it's just the two of us talking about our favorite watch YouTube videos. So I've been regular on that, but yeah, the podcast has fallen by the wayside. I feel like sometimes I just go through these periods where I'm in a creative lull. I just don't want to record something for the sake of recording something. Like, I have to feel it. I have to be in it 100% or I just don't do it. I'm all or nothing kind of like that. So I know me as someone who consumes podcasts, even I like when my favorite podcasts reliably get released, like the Grey NATO. I like listening to that. Thursday mornings, I look for, you know, that upload so I can download it, right? If they miss a week and I don't know about it, I get bummed. So I understand that. But from, you know, a content creator standpoint, I'm just not meant to be a regular weekly podcaster, I don't think. So I'm hoping you'll get more regular content this year. I cannot promise, you know, if it'll be weekly, bi-weekly, monthly, bi-monthly. I really have no idea at this point, but I am looking to kind of make true on these ideas I have in my brain. Now I have a few episodes I want to do, and hopefully I'll get inspired along the way and keep giving you regular or semi-regular content, but it's sure good to be back. Lots to talk about, that's for sure. There's so much to talk about, in fact, that we are just going to get started. No more dilly-dallying, we're getting right into the meat of the episode. And that's right, you saw the title. It's called The Taylor Swift Effect. And you're probably thinking, you know, this bum hasn't done a podcast in almost 6 months, and his first one back is about Taylor Swift? What gives, man? Well, truth be told, it's not about Taylor Swift. I'm just using her names to play with the podcast algorithms. You know, I was afraid. I haven't done a podcast in so long. People may have forgotten about me. What's a way I can get back and get a lot of downloads right out of the gate here? And I'll use the name of probably one of the biggest pop culture icons ever, and certainly right now, in the title of the podcast, Taylor Swift. And maybe if I say it a bunch, Taylor Swift, you know, that will bring me a ton of downloads. It's like those YouTubers who, you know, put Rolex in the title of every video to maximize views, right? Is this $300 microbrand a Rolex OP killer? Do not buy a Rolex until you watch this video about this $300 microbrand with an NH movement, right? You play with the algorithms. Now, I have no idea if podcasts have algorithms. I guess so, because I do listen to a lot of watch podcasts, wrestling podcasts, true crime, whatever it might be. And you will get on Spotify and Apple anyway, you will get suggestions for other types of podcasts. You know, listeners of the Watchdog podcast also enjoy these. And then you get a bunch of suggestions. It's a great way to actually find new content, right? So that's my goal. Now, I may get a bunch of 12 to 17 year olds who listen and realize it's a watch podcast and not a Taylor Swift podcast and probably turn it off in 30 seconds. But hey, I think that still counts as a download. You know, maybe I'll just name every episode, no matter what it's about, Taylor Swift and Rolex. That way I, you know, get a whole large new audience, but I stay core, true to the, you know, watch enthusiasts as well. So they still find me. But now we actually are going to talk a little bit about Taylor Swift in this episode. And first, I just want to give a disclaimer. Okay. This is not to bash Taylor Swift whatsoever. She seems like a fine young woman, treats her employees really well, super talented, writes her own music, plays a bunch of different instruments. Now, it's not my style of music at all, but I still respect somebody who's talented, especially in this day and age where, you know, I can make an album using AI and probably sound like Freddie Mercury or something, right? So real talent is something to be appreciated. I'm not hating on her. We're going to talk about her in the NFL and all of this and make correlations to the watch industry. I'm not hating on that whatsoever. You know, I think if you have a problem with Taylor Swift, you probably have, you know, deeper seated problems. You should probably get checked out. really, she wasn't on screen for very much during Kansas City Chief games. I think the average is like 30 seconds per game, even though the way people talk about it, you know, the camera is just focused on her throughout the whole game and you're not even seeing football being played at all. So that's my disclaimer. This is merely a business sort of related analysis about Taylor Swift's effect on the NFL and how it correlates to watches. And have watch brands use the quote unquote kind of Taylor Swift effect to market certain collaborations? And does that work? Is that sustainable long term? So that's where we're going with this. So that's my quick disclaimer. So yes, Taylor Swift, a global superstar that we have not seen the likes of in a very long time, right? She sold out multiple nights at Gillette Stadium here in Massachusetts, New England last year. I remember that. One of them was a very crazy rainy night and her piano and equipment got damaged and all that. She can do the same in Australia, Europe. It doesn't matter. She's a megastar. Now, I know the majority of my listeners and my audience is in the United States, but I'm assuming at this point, even if you live overseas, you have heard about her romance with American football player Travis Kelce of the NFL's Kansas City Chiefs. He plays tight end for them, right? I'm not sure how much publicity this got anywhere else, but starting here around, what, September, October of last year, it was all over the place, all over the news. You know, once news of their romance became public, she started to be featured more and more during the games, usually sitting in a luxury suite. Again, like I said, this didn't really amount to all that much airtime, 30 seconds to 1 minute total, but it did start drawing plenty of attention and money. Now, I guess I should have included this in the disclaimer, but as far as I know, these two have a real relationship and romance, right? There are some conspiracy theorists out there who think this is a total fake relationship for the sake of business. Again, I'm not going to speculate on that. Maybe I'm naive, a cockeyed optimist, but I'm going to believe that these two are really in love. They are actually lovebirds and in a real meaningful relationship. But I remember watching a Sunday night game during the season where the Kansas City Chiefs were playing. They cut to commercial while showing Taylor Swift in her luxury suite. The commercial they cut to? Yeah, that's right. A commercial for Taylor Swift's movie, which was coming out in theaters that next week, the Eras Tour movie, whatever it was called, right? It was then when I kind of started to wonder what was going on here. You know, then you start to hear stories about Taylor Swift fans getting into the NFL and Travis Kelce. His Instagram follower number went way up. Jersey sales skyrocketed like 400%. Go to the playoffs when the Kansas City Chiefs playoffs. Go to the playoffs when the Kansas City Chiefs playoff game was the only one to be picked to be shown exclusively on the streaming network Peacock. Why do that? Makes perfect business sense to me, right? Get all the Taylor Swift fans who want to catch a glimpse of her and Travis Kelce and make them sign up for Peacock. Brilliant business move. Here are some numbers to put the Taylor Swift effect in perspective. This is from a Fox Business article I found. It is no question that Taylor Swift has impacted the NFL helping the Professional Football Organization and the Kansas City Chiefs attain millions of dollars in revenue, according to a marketing expert. According to Eric Smallwood, president of Apex Marketing Group, Swift has generated $331.5 million in equivalent brand value, or EBV, for Travis Kelce's football team and the NFL as of January 22. Now, this article was actually published before the Super Bowl, so I'm assuming it's somewhere closer to $400 million now. Back to the article. Apex Marketing Group, which started tracking Taylor Swift's impact on the NFL, noted the starting value was about $166 million in October of 2023. That number includes every time the media, including print, digital, radio, TV, highlights, and social media, mentioned the iconic pop star. Smallwood told Fox Business that online media and social media gained the most from Swift's attendance at Chiefs games. Smallwood shared the AFC Championship game, which showcased the Chiefs and the Baltimore Ravens battling it out for a ticket to the Super Bowl, was the most watched AFC Championship game in history. Of course, Swift attended the game and gave Kelce a congratulatory kiss following his team's big win. A lot of these viewers were teenage girls, according to CBS. The outlet reported that there has been a 53% increase since the start of the football season of girls between the ages of 12 to 17 who have been opting to watch NFL games. Crazy, right? I once had a professor in a writing course I took in college tell me that the true definition of creativity is taking two unrelated concepts and putting them together. In this case, we can substitute creativity for financial and business success, right? Taylor Swift and the NFL. Two entities we really wouldn't associate with each other coming together to bring in big bucks. Now again, I'm not speculating that this relationship was born out of some master plan to make millions upon millions of dollars. But however, if I'm Roger Goodell, the commissioner of the NFL, I am calling these two lovebirds weekly to make sure their relationship is doing okay, right? Very expensive relationship counselors on retainer, just in case things go awry. Need to keep these two together. Sure, we want to see them happy in a meaningful relationship, but we also need that money coming in, baby. And if I'm a commissioner of any other sports league, I'm also paying attention to this. The NHL, Major League Baseball, NBA, right? Travis is known as a bit of a player, I think. If he screws this thing up with Taylor in any way, shape, or form, if I'm a commissioner of Major League Baseball, I am introducing Taylor to as many eligible baseball players as I can if Travis screws this thing up. We saw what it did for the NFL. Imagine what it can do for baseball. The baseball season is long. During the dog days of summer, especially if your team's not really all that good, why watch? There's really no reason to watch. Well, Taylor Swift in the stands with a cold beer and some popcorn, might give you a reason to watch. Okay, enough on Taylor Swift. If you're still listening, you're probably wondering where on earth I'm going with this in relation to watches, right? Let's get back to that definition of creativity from my professor. In the last couple years, what two seemingly unrelated watch brands came together to create a major buzz and make millions and millions of dollars, billions of dollars even? That's right, everybody's favorite watch, the Moon Swatch, Omega and Swatch. Now, while owned by the same group, of course, Swatch Group, right? The two brands are light years apart when it comes to the products they make and public perception. I think that's a fair statement to say. Swatch is known for plastic, affordable quartz watches for the most part. Of course, they have their System 51 automatic, but it's not serviceable. You know, they're just thought of being somebody that makes affordable watches, right? Omega is, of course, known as a luxury watchmaker, and their Speedmaster is one of the most iconic watches in history, known for going on the moon. We all know that if we're watch geeks. The Morgan Stanley Report was released a few weeks ago. That's my favorite time of year, where they go over the top earning Swiss watch brands in turnover in Swiss francs. This year, they did a top 50. And according to Revolution's coverage of that report, Swatch experienced a notable increase, moving from number 22 in 2022 to number 13 in 2023, largely due to, guess what? the continued popularity of the Moon Swatch, which sold over 2 million units last year. This success accounted for 73% of the brand's sales, totaling 660 million Swiss francs, representing a remarkable 63% increase year over year, marking the largest gain among all brands in the top 50. That is some growth, right? Swatch hasn't been in the top 20 since 2018. So what, 5-6 years? But through a mega collaboration with a huge brand that came out of nowhere, they've had a huge spike in revenue, right? A bit of that Taylor Swift effect going on here. Omega was Taylor Swift in this case. They played the part of Taylor Swift. Got together with Swatch, and it was a huge deal. Much like Taylor and Travis, this Omega Swatch relationship had its detractors, right? People who hated it. I know a lot of my watch friends absolutely hated it when it was first released. They are Moonwatch purists who hated that Omega would allow a plastic version of the Speedmaster, right? I mean, I know people who sold their Moonwatches because of this. And I don't agree with that, but I don't begrudge them feeling that way. I think it's totally fine to feel that way. You know, can you imagine if somebody made a plastic version of a Submariner, what that would do to Rolex? So I get it. I get that. So as much positive press as you saw for the Moon Swatch, you also saw a lot of negative press, right? But as they say, any publicity is good publicity. Same with Travis and Taylor. People bitched and moaned about how much coverage she was getting all the time. But guess what? When you're even doing that, you're still giving her coverage, right? I think the haters don't realize that sometimes. And also, just like the NFL uptick in viewership from a new audience, Swatch gained a new audience. Whether it be Speedmaster lovers who normally wouldn't consider Swatch but wanted to pair a Moon Swatch with their actual Moon Watch, like my friend Tom Bushy, right? I had him on last year. He is a Moonwatch Speedmaster super fan. He has been for many years. Well, he bought all the Moon Swatches. He was on last year talking about it, how he went to the Mall of America and was finally able to collect them all. So he probably never would have really considered Swatch at this point in his collecting journey, if you will. But he did now through the Moon Swatch. Then there's the people who would never really spend that much on a Speedmaster. But now they could have something for, what, $250, $260 that looked like it. And then there's the people who weren't into watches at all before this. They saw news coverage, families were in line together, and they were also only available at Swatch stores, right? So, gosh, a family of four is in New York City or Las Vegas. They get in line at the Swatch store. They all buy a Moon Swatch. That's really cool. And maybe there's budding watch enthusiasts there, right? Or maybe your dad or uncle, you're a little kid, your dad or uncle has a Speedmaster. Now you can have a watch that looks like his, and you remember that. And someday when you have a job and you're making your own money, you can buy the real thing. Like, I think that's important. Then, of course, there was FOMO, because this thing was crazy, right? Oh, man, I can't miss out on the Speedmaster. The scalpers. Scalpers were buying these in droves, putting them on eBay for a big markup. The list goes on and on. So, new audience for Swatch. But as they say, what goes up must come down. That's the negative part of this type of growth, right? It may not always be sustainable. Travis and Taylor. In many ways, it was fun. And of course, like we covered earlier, resulted in probably closer to $400 million now in revenue for everyone involved. That article I referenced was actually released before the Super Bowl. So I am willing to bet it's about $400 million or thereabouts. I joked that Roger Goodell, the commissioner of the NFL, is checking in on these two every second of the day with relationship counselors, making sure they stay together to keep that money rolling in, right? But what if they break up? What if Travis Kelce breaks up with Taylor Swift and breaks her heart? It could have negative consequences, right? Swifties are loyal to the end. It could turn into some sort of backlash and have a negative effect on the NFL. I don't think you'd lose your core audience over it, of course. Like me, it's not going to affect my viewership of the NFL. But what about that new audience you brought in? The 12 to 17-year-old girls and even their mothers who are watching it with them. That's important to retain that audience. What happens if they break up and Taylor writes a song about him, right? I'm not even joking here. That could happen and have negative effects. So there's that side of it. The same thing can happen with Swatch. The Moon Swatch was a phenomenon, and it has paid off financially, as we covered. They shot like a cannon back into the top 20 Swiss watch brands in terms of turnover. But the Moon Swatch hype is definitely waning. Get it? Waning moon? Moon phase humor just doesn't hit like it used to. Most people who want them have them at this point, right? We're a couple years out. And some see those moonshine editions they keep releasing as cash grabs, even though I hate that term. It's apropos here. And just a desperate attempt to keep the Moon Swatch relevant. Swatch is a fine brand. It makes a fun, fine watch. But they don't really move the needle unless there is some sort of cultural mega hit like this, right? So in order for them to keep this kind of momentum up, they have to come up with big hit after big hit that gets the watch community and the greater public talking. The Blancpain collaboration certainly didn't do that, in my opinion, right? They did a similar type of collaboration with Blancpain with the System 51 Fathoms last year, whatever you want to call it, right? Taylor Swift was, that role was played by Swatch here. They were the hot thing, and they hoped to get that rub on Blancpain. I don't really think it worked. It had a little buzz early, but you don't really hear much about those anymore. So how does Swatch keep it going? Next year is the 30th anniversary for GoldenEye, James Bond, Pierce Brosnan, right? Where the Bond watch, as we know it today with the Seamaster, was born. I'm going to give you a free idea here, Swatch. I'm sure it's been thrown out there a million times before, but I'm taking credit for it, damn it. You make a Swatchmaster 300 anniversary Bond edition, and you will stay in the top 20 for at least another year or two. That's my free advice, Swatch. Take it or leave it. You do it in conjunction with an actual anniversary edition from Omega, and it's even more fun, right? If they both release one, how awesome would that be? People would be clamoring to get both, waiting in line again. Unfortunately, you know, Swatch is probably going to need these type of hits to stay relevant year after year after year and sustain this kind of success. It's not very realistic, and it's not exactly a great business model. So, winding down here, what do we think about this whole Taylor Swift effect thing? Should watch brands do more and more of this? The two unrelated brands or ideas or concepts coming together to make a big buzz and financial benefit? I think this kind of thing, unfortunately, is going to be more and more prevalent as we go forward, especially with the affordable brands like Swatch, Tissot, etc. You know, my buddy Pete McConville and others, when talking about the Morgan Stanley report here, have commented on the premiumization of watches. Brands that sell a lot of affordable watches will be passed by brands that sell fewer watches but at a much higher price. And if that's the case, unfortunately, the Swatches and Tissots of the world may need these sort of buzzworthy releases year after year after year to continue to compete. Well, that was a lot of fun, guys. So good to be back. Talking about Taylor Swift, playing with those algorithms, right? Please let me know on Instagram what you think of this episode and the whole Taylor Swift effect. Do you think brands should do this? Will need to do this? Do you think it's a stupid idea? Do you think I'm stupid? Let me know on Instagram. You can send me a message on there, or I'll make a post about this episode and you can comment on that. You know, like I said, I'll try to be more regular with content, but no promises, no promises. And to Travis and Taylor, I wish you nothing but the best. And hope that it's true love and you're together forever. We'll catch you on the next episode of the Watchdog Podcast. See you later.